Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing this week's Monday Night Raw, their go-home show to this Sunday's Hell in a Cell. At 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. Okay, let's get in here.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Yes, you are listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Okay, I don't know how that sneaked up on us again, but anyway, welcome to another edition of Wrestling Chat Radio. And of course, our Raw Report. You can talk to us at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, or you can log into the chat room and we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well on this week's Raw, the go-home show, to, of course, Sunday's big Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And I want to jump right into it because I think it's important we do. Not a lot of news this week anyway, and there's going to be a lot to get to. So let's get right to this. This show starts out with Dolph Ziggler, Braun Strowman, and Drew McIntyre, who are now apparently collectively known as the Dogs of War, which is a cool name. Actually, a very cool name. In the ring, with virtually the entire heel locker room around ringside. And they're playing it up, saying, the heel locker room did the right thing by coming down and helping to destroy the Shield. Braun Strowman is saying he's going to destroy Roman Reigns. You know, your typical stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, this is probably not good for Drew McIntyre. You know, if it's bad for anyone, it's probably bad for Drew McIntyre. Because Drew McIntyre was sort of the big, tough, hard-to-beat muscle of that team. And now he's not. Now it's Braun Strowman. Clearly it's Braun Strowman. And that's going to second banana Drew McIntyre to some degree. No matter how much they try to make it not, it's still going to. So that's the first thing that crossed my mind. The second thing is, what are they going to do with this? Because you have 18 people out there. And if the Shield show up, certainly they can't fight 18 people. Certainly they cannot fight 18 people. Well, the Shield showed up. And they didn't fight 18 people. They fought 15 people. Including some pretty big names. Again, you know, having some jabrones at ringside is one thing. You got the Authors of Pain out there, who you're just about ready to give this big push to, and they're getting their ass kicked. Thought that was weird. I mean, I know at one point they pulled out the axe handles. I get it, but I mean, come on. 15 against 3. And, of course, Braun Strowman, Drew McIntyre, and Dolph Ziggler take a powder. They don't get hit or they don't engage, which, you know, it's 15 against 3 and you don't engage, but this Sunday you're going to engage one-on-one. And 2-on-2, as it turns out. So again, a little bit bizarre. Baron Corbin backstage tells the Shield, you have two choices now. We're not having this again. You can leave voluntarily for the rest of the night, or you can be arrested again. And Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns will be stripped of their belt. So cooler heads prevail, and Seth Rollins says that's fine, no problem, and apparently the Shield leave the building. Now, normally the Shield coming down and causing chaos, I'm all for. But I don't think you can do it at the expense of the large majority of your heel roster, especially when you got guys out there that matter to a degree. Elias was out there. The Authors of Pain were out there. There are people out there who I don't really think you want to undermine by saying, yeah, they're no match for the Shield. The Shield can cut right through them, even though there's 15 of them and only three of the Shield. I think that's a mistake. So for that reason, I wasn't too thrilled with the opening of the show. And again, you're going to make Braun Strowman a guy who picks and chooses his spots, and he's not the monster he claims he is. And when he isn't at an advantageous position, he retreats. Well, you're not going to get much more advantageous position than 15-on-3. So I really didn't like the opening, Mike. I thought the opening did more to undermine the rest of their division. Again, it seems to be like they care about six people on this roster, and I think this proved it.
Yeah, I think it proves it as well. And look, here's something else to think about. What was it that Corbin said last week? He said, "I don't want the chaos. I'm not acting general manager, and I don't want the chaos." This from a company who, what was the attitude there all about? It was all about chaos. To a lesser extent, the ruthless aggression era was all about chaos. You know, the whole angle with Triple H earlier on when they were trying to the whole conspiracy angle against Triple H to get him away from being the general manager or whatever it was at the time, that was all about chaos as well. So, I mean, that saying doesn't ring true to me when they say, "I don't want the chaos, you know, I don't want to deal with the chaos, you know." And then again,
it's not even so much that if because Baron Corbin wasn't in charge. If Baron Corbin doesn't want to deal with the chaos, fine. But can you have the Shield go down there and wipe out the entire heel roster pretty much, Todd? That was a little much, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is a little much there, have the Shield come down to take on the whole roster, especially with the axe handles. And well, like you said, it's like a little much there, but it's messed up booking right there backwards.
Yeah, I mean, okay, the axe handles help because at least you say, all right, well, look, nobody's going to run into an axe handle. But they didn't have the axe handles initially. They were flipping guys all over for 45 seconds until they had the axe handles. By that time, everybody should have been on them. It just looked fake. I don't think it did anything to help the Shield. It did nothing to help the guys who got tossed around. And it did nothing to help. I could see Dolph Ziggler retreating. I don't see Braun Strowman retreating. Braun Strowman's afraid of an axe handle when he got thrown in the back of a garbage truck and they turned it on. You know, I think that was ill-advised. I really do. It would have been great if the Shield made a really, really, really brave attempt to get to the ring, but once again were stifled by the sheer amount of people that were there. And you know, had to retreat or got the beat down again, because then it would have made the heels look that much more nefarious. That, oh, that's why they brought all these guys out this week, because they knew the Shield was coming out and they wanted to do that beat down again. They want to weaken them up for this Sunday. That makes sense. This really didn't. So anyway, we go to Nikki Bella versus Ruby Riott. And you see, my problem is this. First off, neither one of these girls are in the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view that I know of. So my assumption is that this is just a match for something in the future, maybe building up Nikki for the Evolution pay-per-view. I don't know what they're doing. What I do know is it had no bearing on Hell in a Cell. A lot of these matches didn't. And Ruby Riott, who is probably one of your three or four people I can pick out that I truly think is probably the future, of the WWE Women's Division is once again undermined by a girl who has a YouTube show. I mean, I want to make this perfectly clear. Both Bellas have come a long way in wrestling as far as their technique and as far as their, you know, in-ring performance. But when I say they've come a long way, neither one of them are better than average. And for them to suddenly be these, like, icons, these, you know, legendary figures, the Bellas are here. You know, I'm waiting for the bell to toll like the Undertaker. Oh, the Bellas. Were they ever iconic figures in the WWE? They were always like the last remaining divas in a women's revolution. You know what I mean? And to make them all of a sudden seem like they were the forefront, the forerunners of the women's revolution is kind of dumb. Now, I know they didn't come back to lose, but could you throw them against someone else other maybe than Ruby Riott? Now, the reason I'm being told is because they want to build up to possibly Nikki Bella and Ronda Rousey. I don't see how that can be. It has to be Natty and Ronda Rousey. It just about has to be. But if they're building up the Nikki Bella and Ronda Rousey for this evolution thing, I don't know. All I know is it was an okay match. Crowd wasn't really into it. It doesn't really matter all that much, you know, and in the grand scheme of things, the Bellas just returned to get their 5 minutes of fame again. And it's at the expense of people on the roster who are there every week busting their ass, Mike. I don't know.
Right. And look, I'm more interested in seeing Brie Bella and Daniel Bryan with The Miz and Maurice than I'm interested in seeing the Bellas together. And even though that could be what they're aiming for, you know, because we know they're going to have the women's tag team tournament, you know. So that could be what they're aiming for, and they got to get them some wins to make them at least look passable, but, you know, for that tournament. But, again, like you say, couldn't we get somebody else? Couldn't we even get some maybe a local talent, you know?
Yeah, again, I'm not against them building up Brie and Nikki Bella. They got to do it. I'm with you on that. I am against them putting them against some of the top people that we're told these are the very top of the ladder in the women's division and beating them. Because, again, what message does it send? It sends a message that even when the Bellas take a year and a half, 2 year hiatus, and come back, they are superior to the girls who are here at the very top of their profession at the time. That's the equivalent of saying a baseball pitcher took 2 years off. Oh, yeah, he warmed up in the bullpen. He did some, you know, a few minor league games, and then boom, he's right up here facing people in the World Series and striking them out. It's not going to happen. And all it really does is undermine who you have. It makes fans like me think, well, what they're saying is the old guard is much better than the new. Oh, you couldn't hold a candle to the people we had around here 5 years ago. You may be the top of the top now, but back then, you couldn't hold a candle to these girls. That's what it makes me feel like. So why are we investing in the future if the past is so much better? Usually in wrestling, when you get to that stage where you're going to be a part-timer or you're going to just come in occasionally, you do the job for people. You put other people over so that you say, well, that's the future. I'm not the future. So let me, you know, put some people over. With the WWE, they say, no, there's still juice left in the Bella Orange. We're going to make them superior to all these girls. Why? I get your point, though, Mike, that they got to build up Nikki and Brie for a little while, but they don't have to build them up against these top-notch people. They just don't. There's plenty of girls you could have built them up against. What was Alicia Fox doing? She couldn't get in there and take a fall? Nope. Or even, you know, if you wanted one of the other members of the Riott Squad, why'd it have to be Ruby Riott? Why'd it have to be the top girl in the faction? It just left a bad taste in my mouth. So, anyway, we now find out that the B team is going to get their rematch against Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. And to be honest, because the B team has been promoted 100% as lucky and not good, fans didn't care. Bo Dallas was trying his best to get the fans to chant B team. People were doing it out of like quasi respect or because they figured they should, but there was no real energy in that room for this. And the reason there's no real energy in the room for it is it's a foregone conclusion. You know, the B team's not getting the belts back because you never promoted them as anything other than lucky. And they're certainly not going to lose or make McIntyre and Ziggler lose the week before Hell in a Cell. So this is just a tune-up match. We know it's a tune-up match. And we go into it with that mindset. It's not that it was a bad match, Todd. It's just that it was a match with such a foregone conclusion that fans really didn't buy into it.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they're trying to get the fans to get the B team to win the belts back, but the fans are not into it.
They're not because it's just a lucky – the B team has just been portrayed as being lucky, Mike, not good.
Yeah, and that's – again, we've said it over and over and over and over and over again with this. It's not the performer's fault that this is not getting over like it used to be. It's not the performer's fault. It's the company's fault. It's the booker's and the writer's fault. I mean, we've told them, if anybody was to listen to the show, we've been telling them how they should have promoted the B team. You know, we've told them that, and we told them that, and we told them that. Like with anything else, oh, they'll come back to it eventually, and then they'll probably eventually do what we say they should do, but by then nobody's going to care. They'll be caring even less, you know?
You're right. And now here's the clincher. After the match, guess who attacks Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre? Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, who were told if you don't leave the building, you'll be arrested, and Seth, you will have your belt stripped from you. Now, the announcers even play this up and say, well, that's it. Seth Rollins is no longer the champion, and apparently Roman isn't, because they were warned, and they're probably going to be arrested. So backstage, Baron Corbin says, well, I told you guys what was going to happen. What the hell's going on? I told you. He said, oh, no, you told that the Shield couldn't come back in. The Shield aren't here. It's just Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins are here. Really? Then they have some hokey thing where they have a cop saying, we're going to sue you for, or have you arrested for filing a false police report. It's not a false police report. I don't even want to get into it because it was just silly. And here's what really bothered me more than anything. They put Dean Ambrose right back to being that comedic, irreverent guy when he's talking to the cop saying, so I can count on you if I go to jail, right? I'll give you a call. Wait a minute. I thought you made him gain weight, cut his hair, change his look, change his repertoire, everything, because you wanted him to be a more badass, hard-nosed, non-comedic type guy. You're going to put him right back to it now, aren't you? Speaking of waste of time, let me just inject this into this. I don't even know what the hell Braun Strowman is doing with Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. Again, it undermines McIntyre. You know, you have Luke Harper with no partner over on SmackDown, and you have Bray Wyatt languishing with nothing to do, trying to get a repackaging. Could you not have put the Wyatt family back together and done this? Exact same thing. Braun Strowman needs help. He feels like the Shield is, too much for him 3-on-1. And guess who comes back out of the woodwork? His old family. Nah, that'll never work. Got to put Braun Strowman with two guys who there's no reason in the world he would be hanging out with. But whatever. I should mention that the AOP had their match before this. Rockstar Spotter, as he's now known, Drake Maverick, He does a great job. There is no doubt about the fact that he does a great job. He's already made the AOP much, 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 much better. But, my God, you want to talk about hitting the reset button. They're almost like, don't forget everything that came before this. Forget the fact they had a big feud with Titus Worldwide. We're starting with the jabrons again. Forget you ever saw him wrestle because we did a bad job. That's kind of what you're saying to the audience. Having said that, they look a million times better. This is the AOP we should have seen when they first came in my opinion, Mike.
Yeah, and look, we talked about Drake Maverick for years now, even going back to when he was with what's his name in Impact, you know, Mizdow, you know, Damian Sandow, you know, how good he was doing exactly what they have him doing right now with the AOP. Now, granted, we still haven't seen what's going to happen with him and his job on 205 Live, but that's going to come, I guess. I'm assuming that's going to come. If they're going to have him with these two guys for the foreseeable future, then, you know, then he's not going to be able to do what he's doing on 205 Live.
Yeah, I don't think so either. They're going to have to make a decision. But the AOP look better now, Todd, but it's almost like the WWE wants us to forget what they looked like first coming in.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they should have done this like with the AOP. When they first came in to go out to Jabronis and work their way up, but they did the backwards way.
Yeah, I mean, they almost have to hit the reset button. And again, the AOP is not involved in any match that I know of in Hell in a Cell. So once again, there's another match that has no real bearing on this Sunday. We should talk about the fact that Renee Young is now the permanent host, or I shouldn't say host, permanent commentator. They're moving the coach to, I guess, the pre-shows. Now, one of two things, or maybe a combination of both. Either A, this is yet another cookie thrown to the women. Well, we are for women's rights because we even have a woman for the first time ever on the announce team. That's how progressive we are. Or the coach is just terrible, and they know he's terrible, and they said, this is enough of this. Or a combination of the both, which it probably is. But either way, Renee Young's a permanent part of that announce team now, so that's interesting. We'll have more to say about the Saudi Arabian show in a minute when we get there. Triple H comes out to promote a pay-per-view that's still a long way away. Again, nothing to do with Hell in a Cell. This is the Hell in a Cell go-home show, folks. And while Triple H is always good on the mic, he oftentimes forgets that fans, and when he says something as inane as, well, I don't know why it mattered to The Undertaker what Shawn Michaels thought. He has a right to his opinion. It didn't bother me that everybody said that I was going to lose, but apparently it bothered The Undertaker that Shawn Michaels said he was going to lose. Well, I mean, you guys wrote that. And then you're going to say, well, you know, I think that Taker has just lost confidence in himself. Because ever since our feud, he hasn't been the same. He hasn't? I mean, he had quite a successful run there after your feud. Quite a successful run. And then you said, and he even lost his streak. Well, he didn't lose his streak to you, though. So there was a lot of stuff in there that was like, eh, you know, say what you want. Fans are kind of into it because, well, you know, it's a couple of legends going at it. But at the same time, I don't think fans are too hyped up for this match. And I don't think there was any icing put on the cake here. I just think it was a really Hail Mary attempt to throw some heat on the fire, Mike?
Yeah, I think it was a, I think it was an attempt to try to throw heat on the fire, and that's what I gotta say about that. And look, as far as the whole Renee Young could be a cookie, but again, if you remember before they cut off Talking Smack, she was actually doing a pretty good job. Booker T notwithstanding on Talking Smack. I mean, when Booker T wasn't on there, you know, she had it moving pretty well. She's gone between her. There was a definite chemistry between her and Daniel Bryan, and her and some of the other people that would appear on there. And she was good on there. So I could actually see this working out very well, you know. And she seems to have a chemistry with the two, with Cole and Graves.
Yeah, I'm fine with her. I'm just saying, why the sudden change? She was there when you hired the coach. She was there. And you knew she had qualifications because ESPN and a couple of other people were coming to call for her. So you knew she had the qualifications. So why now? The timing of it. The timing of it is what bothers me. Because it makes me think it's another, don't look at Saudi Arabia, look over here type thing. I mean, I like Renee Young. I like her better than Coach Todd, but again, the timing is a little odd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, sometimes you don't really hear on the commentator that much. You only hear
she's trying to find her spot. Give her a little bit of time. She's trying to find her spot. She'll be fine. She'll be better than the coach, but again, the timing just seems odd to me. We then have Bobby Roode and Chad Gable teaming up. I like this because I know where it's going, and it's going there really, really quick. They're gonna fast roll this, and it's gonna go one of two ways. Either Chad Gable is gonna turn on Bobby Roode, which is the bad way to fast roll this, or Roode is gonna turn on Chad Gable, which is the right way to roll this, because Roode needs a heel turn immediately. But it was Chad Gable who kind of took the initiative to tag himself in and make the pin last night, and then, you know, it was a little weird. It makes it look like it's Gable who might, maybe that's just Gable's way of doing things, and it's going to irritate Roode, but it almost made Gable look a little bit like an ego head, and I want to get the win, and I don't know where they're going with this, Mike, but either way, it's going to be a short-lived team, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's going to be a short-lived team, and this could be an interesting feud, you know, an interesting, say, three, four month feud, you know, because these guys, I mean, you look at how they come to the ring, and he's actually, I don't know if it's annoying to him, if they're going to play it off as when he comes to the ring, when Gable comes to the ring, and he too is doing the whole glorious thing and all that stuff.
Yep.
And I wonder if they're going to play this as it goes on, that Roode's getting annoyed with Gable for doing that type of stuff.
I'm thinking that's where it's going, Mike, but here's the danger. The danger is, if Gable really is annoying, and even the fans say he's annoying, you can't turn Bobby Roode bad then, because what's going to happen is they're going to root for the heel again and say, well, it was Chad Gable's fault. He was an annoying little pest. He was stealing his catchphrases. He was stealing the pinfalls during matches. Roode is a veteran. He doesn't have to put up with that. Shouldn't have to put up with that. And Roode is right. You can't have that. So unless they're going to turn Gable heel, you better handle this the right way and make it that Bobby Roode is jealous of the up-and-comer who seems to be able. Bobby Roode should be the one who has to make the hot tag, you know? Bobby Roode should be the one who sees Gable and says, damn, man, he's a little better than I thought he was, and I'm a little jealous, and that kind of thing. If that's what you're going to do with it, that's the way you got to play it. It's not being played that way. It's being played that Chad Gable is trying to outshine Bobby Roode, while all the while saying, oh, no, I love Bobby Roode. He's great. He's, you know, Yeah, I don't know. I just get this feeling it's going to be Gable. And that's a shame because, to be honest with you, Gable is a good heel. But Bobby Roode needs it more. He needs it a lot more. His character is, you know, is going nowhere here. All right, so we go to the Raw Women's Championship match. Champion Ronda Rousey and Natalya against Alexa Bliss and Mickie James. And here's where I get to say I told you so. Did anyone see how Ronda Rousey sold getting hit or kicked? Do you think that's the normal standard way that you sell being hit by an opponent or kicked by an opponent? Or sell being hurt? This has exposed exactly what I told everyone who listens to this radio show for a long time, and that is Ronda Rousey didn't do any heavy training before she got here. I've been to wrestling schools. I've seen people third day in sell better. Third day in. And if they're not selling better, they're being told you can't sell like that. You got to go do this. You got to do that. You have to look this way. You have to fall this way. Ronda's not doing any of that. Ronda was not. She didn't bust any ass. And again, what moves does she do? Punch, punch, punch. Kick, kick, kick. And the arm, the judo flip, judo flip, judo flip. Armbar submission. That's what she's got. You saw last night what Ronda Rousey's got. Finally, they made her sell a little bit that she wasn't a superwoman and you could lay a glove on her. But they almost did the opposite. I mean, God, it wasn't like they destroyed her rib cage and all of a sudden she's like, I'm hurt. You're hurt. What'd they do? They just put you through a normal wrestling match. I've seen Alexa Bliss do that in the middle of the match to plenty of people. And then she has that overly maudlin, you know, interview backstage where she says, fine, but even if I wasn't fine, I'll still be the Hell in a Cell because it's not like I've never been hurt in my career and I've never, ever not shown. And I'm better than she is even hurt. Whatever. The proof is in the pudding. This whole Ronda Rousey thing was a lie. She didn't bust ass to get here. She didn't go down to the Performance Center and train for months and months and months and months. Because if she did, then she's no prodigy. Because if you went down to the Performance Center and trained for months and months and months and months, you'd be better than that. You'd know how to react when somebody kicks you. You'd know how to react when somebody throws a punch at you. And her reactions are not wrestling, pro wrestling reactions. She's acting like she went down in a fight. She's acting like, well, this is UFC, and if I was to go down, I'd go down to one knee like that. I wouldn't go down on my back because then they jump on me and ground and pound me. She doesn't even have the mindset of a professional wrestler at this point, Mike, and that was made very obvious last night.
Right, and you look in the Mae Young Classic. You got a couple of Japanese wrestlers that are this strong style type wrestler type thing, like what Nakamura is, and the female wrestlers, and they get it. They get it. I mean, they'll kick you and they'll get kicked. But and look, I've said it before. And I said it to you, I texted this to you earlier. Becky Lynch is what they hoped Ronda Rousey would be. I mean, it's basically, you look at Becky Lynch, it's basically her finishing maneuver is that arm bar, you know?
Yeah, but look, here's the thing. I don't care if Ronda Rousey has the arm bar as a submission. That makes sense. She's famous for it. I don't care if she does the, you know, ground and pound or the throwing punches thing. I'm fine with that. But I want to see her do some wrestling moves. I want to see Ronda Rousey wrestle. I want to see Ronda Rousey do, you know, Beale slam, drop kicks, body slams, traditional suplexes, elbow drops off the rope. You know, all the things that the women learn how to do. instead of I'll punch you, I'll kick you, then I'll judo flip you really quick, and I'll put you in an arm bar. And if you hit me, I'll go down to one knee like a boxer, taking the eight count. That's not wrestling. It's just not wrestling. So, to be honest with you, I'm just not hyped up about Ronda Rousey. I think she's exposed herself as being exactly what she is, which is she's a personality and she's a name. But she's not a professional wrestler in any great capacity. Could she kick all their asses in real life? Of course. Does she put on an entertaining match where everything looks like it flows well? And no, she doesn't. She doesn't come close to that. We then get a weird segment with like Bobby Lashley and Leo Rush. I don't know what that's all about. Not really sure what it's all about. Braun Strowman is tearing backstage, trying to find Roman Reigns, because he just knows if the other two guys are in the building, Roman Reigns is in the building. And we have an Elias segment. Now, once again, Elias always gets over until he drops the bomb on the town he's in. That's his shtick, and that's been his shtick for, you know, since day one. It's been that shtick since day one. And it still works, by the way. Still works. This time he's interrupted by Mick Foley. Now, for the benefit of people who don't know me that well or haven't listened to the show for a long time, I'm a huge Mick Foley fan. And so it's always good to see Mick Foley. Always good. And I like Elias, but, you know, Mick Foley's here, so yeah, that's great. So Mick Foley comes out, and again, here's the deal. Mick Foley just walking out here causes more of a pop than most anything that happened last night, which should be a message. He then takes the microphone and does what he does best, really, and that is just totally sells this entire spot. And he doesn't have great material to work with because Elias is saying to him, look, you know, I'm not going to lie. That was a moment. And, you know, that's going to live on in infamy forever. I get it. But that's in the past. And now you're just like a broke down old dude coming out here, you know. And Mick Foley really, you know, Mick Foley has that ability to just turn it on the microphone. And he did. And says it's a lot more than that. And I was almost dead. This happened, that happened. That's the first time I met Stephanie McMahon. So I went to Stephanie McMahon and I asked her to not let this moment go by without me having something to do with it. I'll ring the damn bell. I'll do whatever I have. I'll be the ring announcer. I'll do whatever I have part of this. And she ended up making him the special guest referee, which makes a difference. No matter what anybody says, it's a last minute thing. I get it, but it still makes a difference. And then he goes to leave, and Elias basically calls him out again. Foley again snaps back into that more serious Cactus Jack voice that he does and tells him, look, there's one more thing that Stephanie let me do. She let me make a match tonight. That doesn't make any sense at all, but okay. And your match is with Finn Balor. So Finn Balor comes out, and they have a decent match. And Balor, I mean, this was a better ending than I'd hoped for. Because as soon as Mick said, I have a match for you, I said, it's Finn Balor. We already know that. And I figured, look, Elias is going to put up a decent fight. He's going to get, you know, he's going to get stomped, and that's going to be it. And instead, they did the thing with the missed finishing maneuver and the roll-up, which was a little bit better. But again, I don't know if it's Finn Balor fighting anybody. At Hell in a Cell, is Elias fighting anybody? The whole entire night seemed to be devoted to just a couple of matches that were taking place at Hell in a Cell. And it is the Hell in a Cell go-home show. So I think that's weird. I was hoping for a little bit more than this. So Finn Balor gets the victory. He needs it after having been squashed by Braun Strowman last week, virtually squashed. But again, they're not doing Elias any favors with this, Mike. He hasn't wrestled in several weeks. just been interrupted on TV, and now the first match he does get to wrestle, you know, it's a loss for him.
Yeah, it's a loss, and it doesn't. And look, him basically, one of the things that Mick Foley said to him is, "You're just not that. Your music just isn't that good. Your lyrics aren't that good. You can sing. You've got some talent on the guitar, but your lyrics aren't that good. You know, and I don't understand why your music is selling on this Spotify or whatever it is. You know, and that was fun for me because we know how good Mick Foley is on the mic, and we know what kind of stuff he can come up with. And I don't know if particularly that was written for Mick Foley to say, but it wouldn't be surprising that Mick Foley came up with that on the fly.
Yeah, he's basically trying to tell him, look, it's not genuine what you're doing with your lyrics. You know, you don't have any real passion for it or whatever. And I really thought that Elias probably could have played this a little better, because when Foley went from that kind of jovial, you know, yeah, I am a broken down guy, to snapping into the more harsh, I think he should have been a little taken aback by it. You know, I think Elias should have been like, whoa, you know, what's going on? Instead, he kind of just stood his ground and stood there like, whatever, Foley's yelling at me. You know, it's still a good spot, but and it made me a little more interested in the Hell in a Cell match, which is good. But again, I don't see why Finn Balor has to come out and then pin him. You know, I don't get that. If you go through the whole night, you're scratching your head a little bit with that. And we get the Kevin Owens spot. What's that all about? Kevin Owens comes out and basically destroys Tyler Breeze, and then says that Baron Corbin begged him to come back and gave him the stipulation that he's not responsible for anything he may do to his opponents. And so what you saw last week wasn't him helping Braun Strowman. It was him doing what he wanted to do. See, the WWE knew they had a problem here. They knew it made no sense that Kevin Owens would come out and help the very man who he'd been feuding with for months. Made no sense. So now they got to try to justify it in some way, because somebody didn't, you know, check that. And then they thought to themselves, yeah, you're right. That didn't make any sense. How do we fix that? Well, we'll have them come out and say this. And it doesn't help. It just looks like poorly written crap. And then he gets around to blaming Bobby Lashley because he put Sami Zayn out. And we're staring down the barrel of a KO-Lashley feud that, quite frankly, Lashley's not going to lose. So I don't know how that helps Kevin Owen in any way, shape, or form. You had a pretty intriguing storyline going on with Kevin Owen saying, I quit. And my initial reaction to that, when I heard it, was somehow, some way, Kevin Owen is going to cost Braun Strowman the title in that Hell in a Cell as retribution for everything he's done to him. And that's how they're going to get around how Roman Reigns is still a champion. And he's not even gone. He's just gone the 1 week. You wouldn't even know he was gone because he's not on SmackDown. So the next Raw, he's on. Played this quite differently and made fans really think, well, you know, something is going on. I don't know where KO is. And you could have brought him back with a whole different feel. So we could have hit the reset button on Kevin Owens, and we could have got a guy who you say, this is definitely going to be a top guy now. They're pulling the trigger on Kevin Owens, pushing him to the top. I don't see that now. I see Kevin Owens getting in a worthless feud with Bobby Lashley in which he's going to get beat. And then where do you go from there? If you're Kevin Owens, it's like the minute he signed his long-term contract, they gave up on him. Oh, we got him under our control now. Who cares? Nothing he can do about it. And that's not, it's just not conducive to a good show. So last night, as a go-home show, I think it failed terribly. It didn't really make me want to see any of the matches more on Sunday. Maybe a little bit with Hell in a Cell now that they've added Foley. but the rest of the matches weren't even really relevant to Hell in a Cell or anything that's happening on Sunday. And as far as the Ronda Rousey thing, again, we saw what we're going to see. She has three moves. They're not even moves. She kicks you. She punches you. She does the judo flip with your arm, and then she does the arm bar. That's it for Ronda Rousey. And when she sells like she's in a UFC fight, and she goes down to one knee like, well, if I go down on my back, you know, they'll jump on me and ground and pound me. This is pro wrestling. I don't believe she busted her ass to learn pro wrestling. I don't believe it. Because I've seen people go into a pro wrestling school and be there a week, 10 days, and have a little bit more feel than she does. So I don't buy it. We then end with Braun Strowman coming out, droid half of the backstage, and calling out Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns eventually comes out, stands on the announcer's table, and Braun Strowman comes to get him. We have a little bit of a brawl, and then Roman Reigns, it was Braun Strowman who's going to attempt to put Roman Reigns through the table. Reigns scoops him up. Basically, Samoan drops him off the table and through the floor. And that's how Raw ended. Now, let me take a little bit of time to explain that the WWE has made a critical mistake. And the critical mistake they made is that they have put all of the gold and all of the emphasis on any future feuds, major feuds, with six guys. The Shield, Ziggler, McIntyre, Strowman. That's it. And now we know that Ambrose and Rollins are going to go for the tag team belts at Hell in a Cell. Rollins is the Intercontinental Champion. We're not going to get these defenses anymore because it's all going to be about these factions. If you were going to have these factions, get the belt off Rollins. If you want to keep it on Reigns, fine. But get the belt off Rollins and get the belt the hell off McIntyre and Ziggler, and let this just be a feud to be a feud so that you can have a tag team storyline not involving these guys going on. So that you can have an intercontinental belt storyline not involving these guys going on simultaneously. Instead of just having everything, the whole soup now is these six guys. That's it. They got all the belts. They got all the TV time. They got all the feud buildup. That's it. And there is no alternate real storylines going on. Oh, you can say, well, Kevin Owens kind of got a storyline. Come on. The major storylines are all around those six guys, and everybody else is irrelevant. You've got all kinds of tag teams here. The Revival is a great tag team. AOP is a great tag team. You could have made the B team a great tag team. You have the opportunity to give that Intercontinental belt to someone who can then feud with a whole bunch of people who aren't really in the spotlight right now. Because I got news for you. Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, they're going to be in the spotlight, belt or no belt. If they're warring with these guys who are calling themselves the Dogs of War now, that's a spotlight thing. Belts aren't really necessary for that. And you may as well give it to some poor schlub who says, look, I don't even really have a storyline. How come Finn Balor can't have a belt? How come Kevin Owens can't have the belt? How come Elias can't have the belt? Give the belt to somebody. Give the Intercontinental belt to somebody so they can have a storyline, eh? Give the tag team belts to somebody so they can have a storyline other than these same six guys. Because that's going to get old quick. Mike, what's your thoughts about that?
You're right on that, and that's the thing, you know. I mean, and furthermore, we've asked this question before. Where is Beauty and the Man Beast? They were former, you know, they were former world champions, tag team champions. They can hold the championships again at some point. And look, as far as Ronda Rousey goes, you're absolutely right. I'll put it to you this way: she even had problems when her and Natty were going to do that double suplex, positioning herself to do that. So double suplex. If she was a real if she had spent some time in the performance center, she would have known what to do there, you know.
Right, and she's beside the girl who basically is supposed to be her trainer. So I don't believe it. I don't buy it for 1 minute. I think they pissed on our leg and told us it was raining. Now let me end this before we rate this week's Raw with this. It's now pretty much written in rock that Shawn Michaels will make his wrestling return. Not his in-ring return, because that'll be apparently in Australia as a guest referee. But his wrestling return will be in Saudi Arabia, where he will team with Triple H to do DX versus the Brothers of Destruction, which will be The Undertaker and Kane. And I want everybody to know that Glenn Jacobs is now a politician, an elected official. And this is not the way you want to begin your run as an elected official, by going into Saudi Arabia and saying, oh, we don't care. We don't care what the hell kind of human rights violations they have down here. Who cares? Mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. And I think that, you know, we can discuss the Renee Young thing more in depth, but I'm telling you guys, I know everybody's skeptical, and they say, well, listen, Renee Young had to prove herself before they would give her that position. She had to be in the company a while and prove herself. It's just Renee Young moving up the ladder. That's not true. Renee Young was giving talk and smack. They knew she was good. They gave her own show. Renee Young was given, she's the head of the pre-shows. She is the one who controls all the pre-show. Who gets to talk, who she calls on, everything. She is the host of the pre-shows. They knew she was good. And they knew she could call wrestling matches. They waited till now to give her that opportunity. And they first said, just a one-time-only thing. Coach is on assignment. She's going to fill in. And she filled in again. Then it's, it's permanent. You don't think that was a plan? I mean, come on. You don't think that's a plan? Because here's a news flash for all the Renee Young, you know, supporters, and I think she's fine. She wasn't good the first time. So if that was really her, big test, and if she didn't pass it, it was back to the pre-shows, she didn't pass it. It wasn't. It was always going to be this way. She could have sat on that microphone and sang lyrics to, you know, 1980s pop songs, and she still would be one of the announce team now, because that was already done. You don't just take a Jonathan Coachman that you gave X amount of dollars and say, hey, by the way, we're kicking you to the pre-show. No, there's no way. He knew that from day one when Renee Young first grabbed that microphone. It was already done. That's a done deal. Now, whether it works out or not, I don't know. She seems okay. She has an enthusiasm that's nice. She's certainly better than the coach, Mike, but that was a done deal long ago.
Yeah, that was a done deal long ago, and that's what I got to say about that. As far as you know, grading Raw this week for a normal show, it might have been a C plus C minus show, but this was a go home show. This is a go home show. So it's gonna be for me a D plus show, D plus show. And furthermore, I'll say this. I will bet you tonight's Go Home SmackDown is going to be 10 times better.
I'll tell you this. If past performance is any indication, SmackDown has been much, much better than Raw. Todd, what's your rating overall on this show?
I got to go with Mike. The same grade. D plus. I'm going to give it.
Yeah, I mean, for a Go Home show, this is the problem. Let's go through the matches. Nikki Bella against Ruby Riott. There's nothing to do with that. Absolutely nothing to do with Hell in a Cell. AOP against Jobbers has nothing to do with Hell in a Cell. Elias versus Finn Balor has nothing to do with Hell in a Cell. Kevin Owens versus Tyler Breeze has nothing to do with Hell in a Cell. There was an awful lot of matches, the tag team matches, it had very little to do with Hell in a Cell. Ronda Rousey, of course, is taking on Alexa Bliss, so that had to do with Hell in a Cell. And, of course, the whole Shield thing, that had to do with Hell in a Cell. That's it. So, like I told you, there are six guys that the WWE right now is promoting, and then Ronda Rousey. And that's it. That's your entire Raw division, and the rest of the guys are five down the ladder. Where over on SmackDown, things are a little bit different. We got some interesting matchups on SmackDown. All of the matches in Hell in a Cell from SmackDown are the ones I'm looking forward to. And we'll talk a little more about this on Sunday, but as Mike said, we talked off air. And unfortunately for the WWE, Becky Lynch is becoming what they wanted Ronda Rousey to be. Some girl who's just like a tough talking, I'll get the crap done in the ring and I don't give a damn who likes me and who doesn't type person. And the WWE's not going to like that. They're not going to like it because I know for a fact they're going to say, oh, well, she's getting a lot more pop than Ronda Rousey, even though they're not on the same show. We can't have this. We got to do something to undermine Becky Lynch. And the next thing you know, she's going to drop a bunch of matches. And they're going to waste this opportunity because they think they have to pick their favorites and say, these are the ones that you need to really like. These are the ones that we want you to cheer for. These are the ones whose merchandise we want you to buy. Instead of just letting it generically happen and going with the flow. Last night, what I saw was primarily Triple H promoting a match that's far away. Because, of course, it's Triple H. Did you see anybody else get that time that could have used that time to promote one of their matches? No. So we'll see what SmackDown brings tonight. But I can promise you this. Even if it's bad, it's still going to be better than last night's Raw because last night's Raw did not feel like a go-home show. Last night's Raw felt like a very so-so normal Raw, maybe 3 weeks away from a pay-per-view, Mike.
It really did, and that's the thing. And how many times over the past couple of years have we said that about Raw go home shows? I mean, it's like it's almost a self fulfilling prophecy. It's almost a pattern that they do, that they've done over the past 6-8 months to a year. That the Raw go home shows aren't really go home shows. Whereas,
no, they seem to think they don't need them anymore, Mike. They seem to think that it's just it's irrelevant. That they kind of feel that way. It's a shame. I hope SmackDown tonight doesn't feel that way. We'll be back here on Friday to let you know what we thought of SmackDown. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. WrestleChat Radio is a Savage Blade production.